Hi, it's so good to be back. Thank you so much for allowing me to return for what we're going to call part two of the Four Immeasurables. When I was here last, we didn't have quite enough time to go down into what the four immeasurables actually are. So today we're going to do a little bit more of an excavation. I am a student of Tibetan Buddhism from the Drikung Kagyu lineage of Tibetan Buddhism. And what that means simply is that it's one of the most endangered lines of Tibetan Buddhism because, of course, there was so much destruction and continues to be so much destruction of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition in Tibet. So when the lamas and the teachers escaped Tibet, they began to move around the planet sharing their wisdom teachings. And up until then, Tibetan wisdom teachings had been sequestered. The world didn't have them. When I was a little girl, my grandmother had, she was a Dutch Lutheran reform practitioner and very stern, very, very stern woman. No fun, no dancing, no cards, no playing around. But she had in her curio cabinet a little piece of sculpture. It was brass. And I was always very intrigued by it. There was never any story that went with it. I didn't really understand what it meant. But when she died, I inherited it. And I also inherited this little box of things that my mother thought that I would enjoy from my maternal grandmother. And there was a box with shark's teeth in it from her visits to the ocean in Florida. And there was some pamphlets. And a few of the pamphlets were Buddhist. They were 10 cents a piece, and they were printed in the early 20s. And they've become part of artworks that I've created over the years. But they gave me a glimmer of hope. And I received also the the little brass sculpture, which was hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. And I thought, aha, my maternal grandmother was a closeted Buddhist. She was so stern, there were only certain ways you did things, but somewhere in her, she had put aside these few things that showed that she was interested in a broader concept of what's possible in the world. So, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil is just one way of recognizing that our brains jump around a lot and we're always going from this to the next thing. So in Tibetan Buddhism, I'm sort of heartened by the pantheon of practices there are to get us to calm down. So today I want to talk a little bit further about the Four Immeasurables. And the Four Immeasurables go like this. May all mother sentient beings, boundless as the sky, have happiness and the causes of happiness. May they be liberated from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they never be separated from the happiness that is free from sorrow. May they rest in equanimity, free from attachment and aversion. The Four Immeasurables are a practice to help us come back home to our own mind and to quieting our mind. So I want to walk through the four parts because they're not clearly shown in the poem that you have as an insert today. But you can take this home and you can actually see where this takes you. So I want to walk through it basically line by line and insert what is this immeasurable? What is this thing that is limitless? What is this thing that cannot actually be defined? So when we say, may all mother sentient beings, boundless as the sky, in Buddhism, it's a lunar-based religion. So it goes by the lunar calendar, and the lunar calendar is suggested to be more subtle, more reflective. The moon is in the sky, but there are Buddhist stories about if you put a series of barrels along the edge of a lake, and you fill those barrels with water, and the moon comes through doing its dance in the night, you'll have one moon in the sky, but you can have 100 moons dancing along the edge of the water. So the moon is reflective, and it turns us inward. So that's a lovely way to think about This first entry, may all mother sentient beings boundless as the sky, is turning inward toward the mother that cares so much for us that she would give her life for us. The mother who never meets her child still loves that child so deeply. I didn't meet my son until he was 32 years old. And so I got to play a game for 32 years. There he is, that's him. There he is, that's him. With whatever age he would have been at that time, every young man that age, no matter where I was on the planet, stood in for my son. So it's a very expansive way of thinking and being. Have happiness and the causes of happiness. Happiness and the causes of happiness come from metta, just what we just experienced with loving kindness meditation. That's how we experience happiness, is by sending loving kindness first to ourselves and then out to others. In Buddhism, that's the Buddhism 101. You want to be happy? Find a way. It's going to be your way, but find a way to send loving kindness to yourself and then extend it out to others. You can't do it the other way around. You can't send loving kindness out to somebody unless you've already owned it, claimed it, allowed, named it, brought it into your own awareness. May they be liberated from suffering and the causes of suffering. The whole idea of suffering is basic to Buddhism. Life is suffering. It's hard work to be born. We suffer to be born. There's lots of stories. They're very graphic about how we're jammed into this tiny little space for 9 months, and then we have to work so hard to get out of that space in order to live. And so being born is difficult. It's suffering. Dying is suffering. We don't know when we're going to die. Old age is suffering. Sickness is suffering. These are the four primary sufferings of being human beings: birth, old age, sickness, and death. Kind of covers it. So the antidote to suffering in the immeasurables is compassion, having compassion for ourselves. We know we're going to die. We know that we're going to get sick at some point or another. We know that if we have felt sick, we can identify with other people when they have that same kind of experience. If I've experienced violence, I'm going to have compassion for others who have experienced violence. If I've experienced poverty, I'm going to have compassion for others who are yearning to be able to live in the world in a sane and equitable way. So compassion is the second immeasurable. The first is loving kindness. The second is compassion. When we get down to being free from sorrow, the antidote, the immeasurable for freeing ourselves from sorrow, is to find the joy. There are Buddhist teachers who talk endlessly about the glorious wretched and the wretched gloriousness of being alive. Because it is. It's just sort of like, you know, how you just kind of one day, one moment, one minute, one day, or one hour, you're up and then you're down. You watch the news, it pulls you down. You see your grandchild, it lifts you up. We're just constantly moving back and forth between sorrow and joy. We might not call it that in any given moment, but if we distill it down to an immeasurable, we are not free from sorrow for very long. So joy is the antidote, and giving ourselves what we call a dose of joy medicine, finding something, you know, finding the beauty, looking at one another as if we never saw each other before, instead of, oh, you. You know, even parents with children, the child is born and the whole family celebrates. And by the time the child is five, it's like, oh my gosh, he's a holy terror. You know, what are we going to do with this kid? So joy is the antidote for sorrow. And the last of the four immeasurables is the grasping. We all are grasping. Human beings, I want that. I desire that. I need that. So we're grasping, or we're pushing things away. I can't stand that. I don't want that around me. That repulses me. So free from attachment and free from aversion, the immeasurable is equanimity. It's such a gorgeous word. To be equitable is overused. We think about being equitable and it doesn't really penetrate. But I think Buddhism does us a service because even the word immeasurable is not a real word. It's not real. It's a word that describes something that can't be described, like a boundless sky. It's a beautiful concept, a boundless. How many times do we look at the sky and think it's boundless? No, we put science on it, which is wonderful. It's contained. If I'm a rocket ship, I'll blast off and I'll get to the outer limits of the stratosphere, and my booster will fall off, and there I'll go into the silent, dark stillness of the universe. But in Buddhism, the boundless sky gives us a place to be, to live, to connect. So equanimity, I think, is a really lovely way to think about letting go of our desire, our human desire, to get, and push. So now, when we go through the four immeasurables, and you'll recall last time I also mentioned that the immeasurables is about an unconditional friendship with ourselves, something called Maitri. And Maitri, we kind of, you know, make that into a fun little practice where if you have a tree and you can call it Maitri, it can give you a place to focus your practice of the immeasurables. So the immeasurables, one last time, now with a plug-in of loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. The four immeasurables. May all mother sentient beings, boundless as the sky, have happiness and the causes of happiness. May they be liberated from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they never be separated from the happiness which is free from sorrow. May they rest in equanimity, free from attachment, free from aversion, under the boundless sky. Thank you.